Hey there, welcome to XR Industry Leaders with Arbor XR. My name is Brad Scoggin, and I am the CEO and one of three co-founders of Arbor XR. And we've had the opportunity of working with thousands of companies since 2016, and we've learned a ton about what it takes for XR to be successful in your organization.
And I'm Will Stackable, co-founder and CMO. This podcast is all about interviewing the leaders who are on the ground making XR happen today. True pioneers in the space, from Amazon, Walmart, and UPS, to Coke, Pfizer, and beyond. To uncover the pitfalls, lessons learned, and secrets that you can use to help grow XR in your organization.
Very cool resume. Lots of work in Hollywood on some major motion films. Also now doing some work in the automotive industry. Today we get to sit down with Marty Romances. Marty is in the Bay Area now, originally from Barcelona. He is the creative director and the co-founder of Territory Studios. Thanks for joining us today, Marty.
Thanks, Brad. It's great to be here. A big fan of what you guys are doing.
Well, I'd love to hear kind of how you got your start into mixed reality.
Well, I think, as you mentioned, like we come from a slightly different industry. We started 14 years ago, and our main focus was how we tell stories through graphics and moving graphics in the film industry. And we learned a lot with that, because we're talking in the film industry, you know, you're talking to a broader audience. Everyone needs to understand what's happening in these graphics, and directors use us to kind of create visual shortcuts to tell stories. Like if these guys are going from A to B and everyone sees a line that goes from point A to B, everyone in an instant gets it. Mm-hmm. And it's a universal language, it's design. So we started doing more and more on that, all the way to working with Marvel. And those visual graphics gave us the opportunity to start inventing technologies of the future, how these superheroes, you know, what technologies are using. Now we're looking at things that come from another galaxy sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, ended up with great iconic designs like the Iron Man, you know, heads-up display, or, you know, Black Panther technology. All of those started to infuse, even before, with Prometheus and other projects like The Martian, started to infuse like the idea of like what it could be possible if we had technologies that are capable of doing these things. And very quickly we realized that on the sidelines we had the whole virtual reality industry starting to grow and evolve and mature, to the point where we started to see headsets with augmented reality, you know, such as like, of course, from Oculus to Magic Leap first iterations. And this is really what got us into the industry. People that were looking at the visualizations and these prototypes that the world of Hollywood was allowing us to do without restrictions. That's the beauty, right? We don't have to develop it. I've worked with that. And Nintendo, and I know how hard it is to develop something that works. So in the films, you just have to show how it could be. It's just the idea, it's visually conceptualization. And that, to have no constraints, allowed us to kind of be a bit more free to dream in certain scenarios. People that were then looking to develop things for real products, started to get in touch. And by the time that happened, we already started to have a digital vertical in our company that was focusing mainly on automotive designs for the dashboards, which essentially was, you know, the automotive industry was asking for the same things that Hollywood was asking, like how we can tell very complex stories to a broader audience when they sit in that driver's seat, and all of a sudden we need to tell them that the car is going to park by itself, or the car range of battery now needs to show that. So this electrification of vehicles, you know, over 7 years ago, opened the doors for us to do the same that we do with films, tell stories to a broader audience through the user experience. And I think that combination is where we started to see the most successful stories with mixed reality, which was, you know, including mixed reality into these cars of the future.
So taking the, you had the, I guess, the creative liberty with Iron Man and other films and then putting that into the heads up displays and other displays in cars. I mean, that's a pretty cool transition.
It takes time, but it's a cool transition to dream of.
Yeah. That's very cool. Before we move on to some enterprise, I mean, of all the stuff you did in the film industry, is there one that was the most fun?
I mean, if we had to link it to VR and mixed reality, I think Ready Player One probably is the one that speaks, you know, the most to that type of industry of gaming in a virtual world while you still have like a real world behind it. I think that was very iconic. Working with Steven Spielberg as well is always iconic, but it's hinting at lots of opportunities on the physicality of certain user interfaces as we, you know, how we move from the flat screen or the flat visor to something that it's augmented in front of us and, you know, gives us a bit of a more 360 scenario in terms of what the opportunities are in terms of interaction between the human and the machine. And this is certainly what we are seeing, again, working with Magic Leap very closely and doing actual prototypes for automotive industry like Audi or Mercedes. You're starting to unlock the future of these cars that now don't need screens because everything is overlaid on the cabin. But yeah, Ready Player One, I would say so, very iconic. And there was one that's a film for Apple TV called Swan Song. And that was a very interesting case because we were asked to not design for the science fiction futuristic superhero, but instead design for a more plausible future. What if this augmented reality that these people are using in their everyday life was designed by Google, Apple, Meta? You know, let's just bring it down to like that more / corporate scenario. And we started designing all of these interfaces. And that was way like a couple of years before Vision Pro was presented. And the fun thing happened is that when we saw the Vision Pro UI designs and we compared it to what 2 years prior to that release we did with that film, the, you know, the similarities were, you know, it was a funny coincidence maybe, but we basically ended up in the same spot, like subsurface scattering, you know, solutions, very simplistic, like the use of very neutral colors, the use of light and shadows. So yeah, that was another one that was pretty interesting in this sense.
Something I'm fascinated about, you're kind of hinting at it here, but the fact that your job was to visualize and imagine what XR could be in the future with no limitations. You're not having to think about what current headsets can do. You're thinking about what Iron Man's, you know, billion-dollar suit can do. Not having those constraints and being able to sort of dream, what are some of the things that you explored or learned that you feel like are, you mentioned Apple Vision Pro and they're maybe some of the interaction, the UI, the UX. What are some of the things that you're now seeing or maybe that you expect to see in the future with headsets as capabilities on the hardware side grow?
I think there's, I see it as two points that keep getting closer and keep evolving. The hardware, as you said, like if we're looking back, very clunky hardware, I think we're still there, but it's not an excuse anymore. I think we can start prototyping now. But it's also like the software and some of the solutions that we are seeing. I see two things happening there. Happening exponentially, and I think they're going to meet at the right point probably in the next couple or 3 years. One is the hardware is getting smaller, the technology, you know, the chips, everything, like even the batteries, the solutions. But on the other end, you see, like, on the software side, you see things like, you know, radiance fields, nerves, Gaussian splatting, solutions on creating very quick, efficient 3D that is not that is running in real time. You see NVIDIA doing things like Neural Angelo, like they are now meshing these radiance fields that are giving us a very, very quick solution, meshing it into polygons so we can do relighting scenarios, which is very important for AR. I see these two things. And of course, you have Gaussian splatting, which is fully infused by AI and the algorithmic, like,
Can you give us like a 10 seconds on what is Gaussian splatting?
Basically, so a nerve, it's it's a 3D imagery based off radiance fields, which means like I can take a couple of pictures of a shoe from a few different angles. It's not the same as photogrammetry. You know, photogrammetry, you need to take as many pictures. So all it is using is the images, and but it needs images from many, many different angles. With radiance fields, what you have is a machine learning process, an algorithm behind basically calculating every single point of light, how it will bounce into a specific surface, identifying what type of material that surface might be, and how these might reflect light to another area in order to triangulate all of these points to create an angle that you haven't taken a picture of. So basically, it's recreate how the light will be affecting on a side that you're not seeing, which for transparencies, which are very important, in my opinion, in terms of like user experience, and in this case of like, you know, UIs that exist and float next to you. For transparencies, for like creating very not high polygon dense or very, very heavy data 3D elements, this is what we need for these headsets that don't have like two NVIDIA graphics card running, right? So that help. What Gaussian splatting is basically the same as what you a Gaussian blur will do visually. It probably takes 2 points of data, a one and a zero, and it creates a medium point. It creates like what the gradient will be. It calculates that. If you do that with black and white, the solution will be a grayscale. But if you do it with millions of points of refraction and reflectance information, normals, and lots of different passes that 3D data have, then Gaussian splatting, basically what it does is like it smooths out almost to a perfect image solution what the Nerve technology is trying to do. So it's almost a supercharged Nerve with AI algorithmic solutions. And I think these are the things that, but the thing is, when you have that, it's a radiance field. So it are points of light floating. You don't have geometry, which was the solution of like, that's amazing. It's so light because you don't have geometry. But if you want to start doing visual effects in it, or if you want to start doing interactions where your hand goes behind it, you need to then cast shadows, your hand shadows. If you want to do VFX and do, I don't know, fire around it, there's going to be light that will need to bounce into that geometry, but that geometry doesn't exist. So what we see now happening is NVIDIA and other great, you know, innovators creating papers and solutions like Neural Angelo, which is basically you meshing Nerve radiance field solution, 3D solutions. These are the things that are very, very quickly being developed at the same time that I think very quickly we finally see hardware being capable of what we have dreamed of for years. And I think that's the conversion of these, and this is a very long-winded answer to your question, but the conversion of these kind of, to me, what we are waiting for, and we are, what is going to unlock, I think, like the use of this technology for the everyday user. Not only that, of course, content will be king. Without content, this is not going to go anywhere. But at least we're seeing hardware and software getting to a very, very exciting point.
One of the to go back in time a little bit, you had a really cool project with a company called Medivis. Could you Medivis. Tell us about that?
Medivis.
Yeah. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, Medivis was trying to pioneer on. Basically, how do we use augmented reality for, you know, at an enterprise level in a way, but more for like health. And in this case, for surgeons, how can we just show surgeons like a more accurate representation of what they're going to find inside after the incision or things like these, mainly for neural type of surgery. This was like way early in the days, and all we did was helping them, putting our like fictional hat on, help them imagine how this could look, and then take that fictional hat off, get a reality check of how impossible what we were imagining was back in time, and then trying to put like a more of a, you know, software developer hat on and try to create something as close as we could from like more from the UI and user experience side of things. They went and developed these. But if I fast forward to now, what we've been doing with Magic Leap, for example, we see now a super accurate solution on tracking with Magic Leap 2. And we actually most recently have been helping them create a series of solutions, like visual solutions for enterprise, some for supply chain, you know, some for like learning and training on factories. And another one was for a more medical solutions. And it's interesting, they end up in the same spot. Like what the best use case is to have a very accurate representation of, you know, where the issue in the brain is and where the incision, right, where we need to. So yeah, the medical field, I think it can benefit a lot. We work with Intel also in a solution for showing augmented prosthetics for patients. So for them to understand, this is what your new knee is going to look like, and this prosthetic is going to be here, and you can see it augmented in your knee. So that's what we're going to do. We've seen things like this happening for great causes, not just for entertainment, right? And medical, but also for elders that miss driving experiences that put them back in the driving seat without putting them in a car. We're very interested about not just entertainment, but the real use cases that will transform. And what we say, we like to say about us, we try to augment human experiences. And transform them if we can with our graphics and you know, prototypes.
Well, we'll put it in the show notes, but the checking out the video with Metaverse is pretty cool. I mean, it's a really accurate 3D rendering of the body of the brain, and I thought that was really cool. Well, you just mentioned the thing worth helping elderly people get back in a car. So is that giving them the experience of getting back in a car, or teaching them to be more comfortable driving again?
No, I think it's more like the you know, transporting them somewhere else that they places that they miss. The reality here is like there's a big difference to us, like I think for everyone, like between VR, pass-through VR, and true augmented reality. And they do different things. And I think the most important part from the beginning of like choosing the right solution, right? Because for things that are immersive, for things that have to transport you somewhere else, VR and pass-through VR, that's great. But for things that really need to be working right now, as you're driving your car, for example, there's no way that regulations will ever accept a machine that can turn off the cameras outside and you're up in the dark, or the latency these have. Like, so for transportation, we have been doing a lot of work with AR headsets, and that to me, I'm always most excited about AR than I am about VR and pass through VR. But that's maybe a more of a personal preference.
Going back to the Iron Man heads up display, which is an incredible AR heads up display that you can kind of imagine eventually we might have something similar with a pair of glasses like the ones I'm wearing. What do you see coming down the pipeline soon? And maybe what lessons did you learn and have you learned about creating user interaction and a good user experience within an AR framework?
I think to answer this last one first, one of the things that we realize is that, you know, we sort of started to see the data points and we could trace a certain path of speculation. I think being very close to latest technologies, like we were prototyping for augmented reality contact lenses that were hitting your retina cones, right? Things like this, sometimes for us, like these crazy things that are happening here in Silicon Valley, like we always say we come from Hollywood and we're bridging now Silicon Valley, but some of these things really excite us in terms of where things are going, and the path is clear. It's going into a more portable, you know, more efficient in terms of battery and computation solutions. And it's going to be very, very defined between what I was saying, what is AR, what is to use the real world as your scenario, as your environment, versus what is something that needs a lot of more power because you're going to be fully immersed into somewhere else. there's going to be a division of product there, I think. And as I was saying, like the lighter, they're going to get lighter. They're going to get all of this, you know, better, more sufficient. That's one thing. Just to answer, like the second question was, I can remember the second question now, Will.
So yeah, first question was, where's this going? And the second question is, what did you learn?
Oh yeah.
What have you learned about designing a great AR interface?
So what we have learned, and that's the best part, we always say to our clients and our brands, like, okay, you know, we all know that maybe this is not ready for prime time, but you're going to be late if you're not developing now. And that's why we're developing with people like Mercedes or Audi or Nike, Prada, Dolby. We're developing things in AR just to be prepared and just to have the real foundation that these you know, enterprise companies need to be able to quickly react when these things are now then ready for prime time in 2 years. I think the people that are not doing this now are going to be late in 2 years.
Yeah.
And why I'm saying that, because that's exactly the answer to your question, is because we're learning things by doing. We're not imagining things. I remember when I first landed in San Francisco 8 years ago, I was in a meeting with Tom Chi, who was at the board of like the Google Glass. And the amount of meetings about deciding which color the Google Glass UI will be, like theory basically told us that red was the best one because it uses less energy. And because, so the theory was telling us, and there was so much time wasted, because the reality is that once you start doing and not talking about it, you start realizing that red is the worst case scenario for visibility outdoors and all that stuff. So it ended up being like blue and white. But my point is, we learned that by doing. I'm a very, you know, I always say rapid prototyping has been what brought us in San Francisco. It was through different sort of a type of Y Combinator activations and acceleration events that we participated on, where we realized we can do this, we can rapid prototype, and we're going to learn very quickly about the technology. And that's exactly what's happening. I remember when we were doing the Audi Active Sphere, which is, if I had to highlight a project from us in terms of AR, the Audi Active Sphere is the best representation on where we're going and what we're doing, and I think what we're doing very well. By doing these things, you learn things. Like, for example, we learned that when we were having certain knob controls floating in front of the driver or the passenger, we're realizing that putting those fully frontal to our headsets wasn't allowing the headset to read where the fingers were, because it was just seeing the back of our hands. It was seeing a knob. Things like this. This is one of many examples, right? But if we were putting that at a slight angle, the headset cameras what we're able to have at least a little bit of visibility to our fingers. So when we were rotating fingers, it was tracking very, very accurately on what it was, a temperature gauge that we designed. So things like these, you will only know by doing it, failing, and doing it again. Or like the position of things, like, you know, elbows needs to always be next to your rib cage. Forget about anything that makes your arms go up. That's going to fail completely. It's like the most uncomfortable thing. But these are small things. Like, where is the area of operations for humans to kind of reach, at least with our hands? Because right now we have lots of other solutions that Apple, you know, came up very smart around gazing. But if you don't do those, you're not learning. And what we kind of tell our clients is like, look, you're not coming here just for the good design, good software developers, and our creative technologies. What you're going to get is 3-4 years of knowledge that we acquired by failing. And you look at Metaviz, and that was done 8 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at like even concepts that we did for Forza. I don't know if you play the Forza, but we designed this Forza Vista, which is augmented graphics on the cars. Like augmented graphics that tell things about the tire, about the, you know, if you go to our gaming section in the website, you will find Forza. That was done 11 years ago. 11 years, AR wasn't quite there yet. But back then, again, we were prototyping like how cool it would be that when you open the hood of your car, you can see all of the graphics augmented where they need to be placed. And that's why I think the power of computation is helping so much human machine interface and user experience in cars, because the cars that what we're used to is a light that turns on with an icon and is red. This is as much as you were getting before. It's a telltale and it's telling you something is wrong with your oil. Right now we can have the render, a render of your car, not a generic car, but your specific car. And we can show you exactly where the issue is through 3D real-time rendering that is showing you that the sensor picked up something in the suspension, frontal right suspension. And that's the beauty of having access to all of this information, that we can then create a better user experience. We can expand that human experience.
I love what you said, the learn by doing. I mean, that's such simple, but such powerful advice. I'd be curious, any advice you would have for, you've worked with several large companies from Siemens to some of these automotive companies. So maybe for someone else who either a content creator or maybe an XR champion inside one of these companies, and they've got some idea, and a lot of our listeners are in training, but there's definitely some, maybe doing some more similar things to what you're doing. But any advice you would have in just getting a project off the ground and selling that internally?
Well, I think it's kind of what we've been doing for years. Like, you don't need to develop anything. Visualize it if you can. You know, visualize your idea, fake it until you make it. You know, the old fake it until you make it. That's what we've been doing for years. We've been faking things because they were not possible. Now we're making things because they are possible. Before we start putting our engineers to work, we're going to visually prototype and try things like making sure that at least we have a very good understanding on where we're going to go, what we're going to build. So we're faking it. We're designing, we're conceptualizing things. So our experience with 3D designs and all of that. And we kind of take videos from POV and we augment things like, will it work if this thing appears here? We're doing that by also mixing like our expertise, with mixed reality before. But we don't develop anything until we have a very good idea and our client has a very good idea on where the time will be spent. Because we know that as soon as you start developing, these things then all of a sudden take a different pace. You know, within 2 or 3 weeks, we can create a video for your product that conceptually explains everything and how it will look. But it won't work. It's going to be like a fake version of it. But at least it's going to allow us to kind of tick some boxes before we spend time and our clients spend money on really developing that. So I would suggest, doing this concept phase first is super important. And then when you start developing, I think there's so many new tools that are democratizing the access of many, many different things. I mean, we're starting to use this AI solution called Move just by just creating quick videos of ourselves. And then you get like a full rig model doing that animation that within seconds, right? Like before you were seeing like EA Games spending millions on a motion capture stage in Vancouver and all that stuff. Like, I feel bad for these guys now because like you take a video on your phone and you pass it through these machine learning, like, and you get a rigged model. Like, these things are evolving so fast that I would say they can really help and supercharge small teams like ours, right? When mm-hmm. we jump into doing these things, small teams to prototype certain things and to get things done. So don't lose touch with these new solutions that are appearing in the market, because they're going to allow you to, again, to supercharge your development, to supercharge the opportunities of a small team really doing amazing things.
Yeah, that's good. That's really cool. And I think it's always better to hear the fake it till you make it advice from someone who's had your level of success. I think has a little bit more authority. So, but I love that. Marty, this has been really good. Where can people find you if they want to follow you, keep up with your work?
I mean, you can always go to territorystudio.com. This is our website. And as you will imagine, because we're diversified through different verticals, we had to kind of make sure that the people can be guided through the website. So if you're interested in like our Hollywood work, you will go to the VFX or, you know, screen graphics. If you want to see some of the stuff that we're doing with digital product, you will see there lots of the stuff that we discuss about, automotive and whatnot. So you can find us there and feel free to reach us through any social media, whatever is X, Instagram, whatever is Territory Studio. I'm myself as well. If you are listening to this and it's like, I want to just get in touch with Marty, jump on a call. My name, Marty@territorystudio.com is the email. And if not, you can find me as well in all social media with Marty Romances with an I, not a Y, because Marty, the American Marty is with a Y. I'm with an I. And we are always welcoming people. Maybe people that want to work with us, you know, or is starting in this industry and wants maybe some advice on what we will suggest. Like, we're very open. We love hearing from the industry at all levels. So, yeah, that will be the best way.
Very nice, Marty. I appreciate that. Marty with an I. And thanks again. I know you're a busy man, so I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us and share with our listeners. And we will catch up with you soon.
Yeah, love a good chat.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.